Welcome to the Cosmic Connection. This is your place to explore the beauty and order of the cosmos.
And your connection to it all.
My name is Amanda Poole Walsh, and I'm the founder of Astrology Hub.
And I'm Rick Merlin Levine, your cosmic navigator.
Now let's dive in.
Let's do it.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Cosmic Connection. We are going to be focused on October. I know you all love the forecast as much as I do. And Rick, it's so great to be here with you. I feel like this might be a big month ahead.
I think that is fair. I think this is a big month ahead. I think it's a big couple of months ahead. It's kind of one of those things where you don't even need to be an astrologer to sense that things are getting thicker, deeper, wider, darker, lighter. I mean, everything all at once. And after a month of, you know, kind of where planets slowed down and there wasn't quite as much to talk about, even though, as we talked about last month, as we got toward the end of September, you know, that Saturn-Uranus square, which is like this thing that just won't ever go away, that Saturn-Uranus square at the end of September, beginning of October, is like about a half a degree apart. And even though it's not exact, exactly halfway between them is the planet Jupiter, the biggest planet in the solar system. And it's holding this position as Jupiter is retrograding back toward Pisces, where it gets to in October. But at the beginning of October, Jupiter is still holding this halfway point where it's a half a square to Saturn on one side, and a half a square to Uranus on the other side. And half squares are not to be trifled with. They're like squares. They're conflict. They're annoyance. They're tension. They're stress that needs to be resolved. And if that wasn't enough, we're at the beginning of October. We are at a magical point where we've had Mercury move opposite Jupiter and then turn retrograde, and then move opposite Jupiter again. And meanwhile, the Sun moved opposite Jupiter. And then Venus, on the 1st of October, is exactly opposite Jupiter. And Mercury, when it goes direct in October, Mercury will also, for the third and final time, oppose Jupiter, and that'll be mid-October 12th. But the point here is that we have Jupiter causing all this stress as it half squares Saturn and Uranus on one side. And on the other side, we have Mercury, then Mercury again, then the Sun, and then Venus, and then Mercury again, all moving opposite Jupiter, all making squares and a half, which are just as strong as squares to Saturn on one side and Uranus on the other. So this is not a simple period of time. This is there's lots of angst. There's lots of concern. I mean, in just a few days, we're recording this on the 29th of September, but we've had four different major storms all in a few days. You know, one that devastated Puerto Rico, Cuba, and then Ian that just hit Florida. And then there's been typhoons and storms up in Alaska and out in Taiwan and Japan. I mean, it's really very, very stressful from that point of view. The energy is heating up all over. I mean, there's just been a sabotage of a pipeline, a gas pipeline from Russia to Western Europe. I mean, there's all of this is very explosive. This is Uranus. And of course, into this whole mix, we have Mars continuing to slow down, which actually turns retrograde the end of October. And that Mars story is quite a story. We'll get to that in just a moment. But on this opening little statement here, let me just say, after a few months of astrologically not a lot happening, this month we have Mercury turns direct on October 2nd. Pluto turns direct on October 8th. Saturn turns direct on October 23rd. And then Mars turns retrograde on October 30th. These are all turning points of four planets this month. On top of that, we have planets changing signs. We have Mercury moving direct back into Libra on October 10th. And then Mercury will move into Scorpio by October 29th. So Mercury turns direct and whizzes forward. We have Venus moving into Scorpio on October 23rd, actually right along with the Sun, the same day the Sun moves into Scorpio. And then Jupiter moves into Pisces on October 28th. If that wasn't enough, we have the first of two eclipses. And that first of two eclipses is on October 25th. And the second, you know, eclipses always come in pairs or twos or threes. This first eclipse on October 25th is within our month, but the second eclipse following it is on the morning of Election Day. And that eclipse is one of the most intense eclipses I've ever seen in my life as an astrologer. So welcome to October.
So Rick, you're calling this theme then a turning point, correct?
I am. And the actual turn may be, we're not turning on a dime. Mm-hmm. You know, that phrase of like being able to like just make a turn, like on a point.
Yes.
No, we're turning on a silver dollar, or it's large enough that although October is the turning point, we're already in the process. And it's going to bleed into November because it won't be until past that second eclipse on Election Day on the morning of November 8th that we kind of have the final piece of the turning point. But then we have this odd effect that I love to call the lag of planets. Now, for anyone who's ever studied Earth science, they know that the first day of summer, which is June 20th or 21st or right around there, which has more sunlight than any other day in the year, is not the warmest day of the year. We're talking Northern Hemisphere here, just to be clear. The first day of winter, the winter solstice, typically around December 21st or 22nd, is not the coldest day of the year, even though there's less heat generated by the sun on that day than any other day of the year. And the reason for that is it takes time for the mass of both land and water to either cool off or to warm up, so that the hottest days of summer are not until July or even August, sometimes even early September. And the coldest days of winter are not until February, typically, the late January or February. Now, the reason why that's so important is that although the actual mechanistic turns of the planets, beginning with the Saturn-Uranus square coming as close as it's going to get the very beginning of October, and all of these planetary turns, Mercury stationary direct, Pluto turns direct, Saturn turns direct, Mars turns retrograde, we get these eclipses. There's that lag of seasons. There's the lag of planets. It takes time for the actual effect. It's almost like the storm, the Hurricane Ian has already hit. But now the hard work begins, because now it's a matter of assessing and cleaning up and integrating and readjusting. And we have that same kind of thing culturally that we will have, I think, through the months of November, December, and January, that mean that even though this is the turning point, we might not realize exactly what has turned until a few months down the road.
Okay. I have a lot of questions based on what you just said. Okay, so Jupiter sounds like Jupiter's a huge player in all of this story. What's amazing is how prominent Jupiter is in the sky right now. I mean, it's
Do you know why, the reason why it's prominent in the sky is the same reason why retrogrades exist. Retrogrades exist when a planet is closer to Earth than it is at other times in its cycle. Mm-hmm. So with the outer planets, Mars, planets outside of Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, those planets turn retrograde when the Earth comes between them and the Sun. The Earth can't come between Mercury and the Sun, but it can come between Jupiter and the Sun. And when it does, that's when Jupiter is closest to Earth. Mm-hmm. And that's when we get to see Jupiter at its almost like full moon phase. Because when the Earth comes between the Moon and the Sun, that's when the Moon is full. So what we have right now, what an astronomer would call simply a Jupiter opposition, we astrologers call it the Sun opposed Jupiter. What we have is Jupiter at its full moon phase or full Jupiter phase, plus it's closer to Earth than it ever gets. So it's brighter than it ever gets on its opposition. We'll have that same thing once Mars turns retrograde at the end of on October 30th, on October 30th, when Mars turns retrograde, and we'll talk about Mars's story in just a moment, but halfway through, or approximately halfway through Mars's retrograde period, it stays retrograde until mid-January. Halfway through that period of time, sometime in early December, I imagine, Mars will be opposed the Sun, meaning Earth will be in the middle, meaning Mars will be brighter than it ever gets. Do you understand how that works?
Yeah.
It's astrology and astronomy mixing together. Now, here's the thing. When a planet is closer to Earth, its signal is louder. Mm. Now, that isn't always good news because too much of anything is not necessarily good. When Mercury is retrograde, as it is now, but when Mercury is retrograde, we don't see it brighter because it's between the Earth and the Sun. That's how it gets closest to Earth. We're on the same side of the Sun. When we're on the same side of the Sun as Mercury, Mercury is like in its new moon phase. It's between the Earth and the Sun. But when we're on the same side of the Earth, I'm sorry, on the same side of the Sun as Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, then they are in their full moon phase or opposed the Sun in an astrology chart. And for that matter, when you look at an astrology chart, if you see any planet opposed the Sun, Mercury and Venus can never be opposed the Sun from Earth's point of view. But if you see any planet opposed the Sun, that means they are retrograde. And I say any planet, the Moon excluded, because it's not a real planet, so to speak. But if you look at a chart right now in our charts, we see that Jupiter is opposed the Sun, Neptune and Chiron are both widely opposed the Sun. They're all retrograde. That's what makes a planet retrograde, is getting closer to Earth. And here's the thing, when they're closer to Earth, they're louder, they're noisier. Too much Mercury fills our head up with noise and we can't discern what's important. We misunderstand things, we miss appointments, we don't read contracts. Why? Because everything's so noisy that we feel the sense of urgency, like if we had a thought on a quiet day, we could hang out with that thought. But on a noisy day, we don't want to lose it. We want to act on it. We want to do something right away. And this is why Mercury retrograde can get such a bad rap. There's nothing wrong with Mercury retrograde if you simply understand that we're covering old ground, because a planet, when it appears to go backwards, goes over the same place in the sky. It appears to. And on top of that, it does it with more urgency because it's the radio station is blaring. So right now we have Jupiter blaring. And there's all this, even though things are difficult, there's hope, there's potential, there's feelings like maybe we're going to make this okay. That's Jupiter louder than normal. When Mars is opposed the Sun, a couple months down the road, Mars is going to be louder than normal, and there may be more anger and more fighting words. And I know, how can that be? It seems like we're, as a race, always on the edge with our anger and fighting words. But when Mars turns retrograde and it gets redder in the sky and it gets closer to Earth, so does our emotions of wanting to establish boundaries and act on our beliefs and our feelings. And sometimes we can certainly overreact, just like we can overcommit with hope and with work when Jupiter is opposed to the sun. So, you know, these are exciting times, but they're not without their caveats, their kind of,
nuance. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Nuance.
Rick, can we go? Okay. Let's do Jupiter a little bit more, because I have some more questions, and then maybe the flavor of Mars retrograde, and then the flavor of these eclipses. Can we do that?
We can. And we have, okay. And we also have a prior to the eclipse, we the solar eclipse is at the end of the month. We have a full moon toward the beginning that we don't want to gloss over.
Okay. So yes. As far as Jupiter by itself makes things bigger, right?
It's a magnifying lens. Yeah.
Okay. Magnifying lens. So we have the Saturn Uranus square that it's theoretically making bigger, correct? And then we have its own half square to Saturn and half square to Uranus, making that energy bigger. And then you just talked about how it's closest to Earth right now, which also makes it bigger. I mean, because normally we associate Jupiter with positive things, but is it because of the energy of the squares and because of the energy of Saturn and Uranus that it's actually going to be experienced in a
Amanda, Amanda, bigger isn't necessarily better.
Okay.
take a look at this current tropical storm. It's bigger.
Yes.
That's all it is. It's Jupiter has magnified the energy of the, you see, all storms are based upon masses of different air meeting. A storm is basically a front of, let's say, a cold, dry air mass meeting a warm, wet air mass. Okay. So with Jupiter there, the cold is colder and the dry is drier, and the wet is wetter and the warm is warmer, which makes storms all over the planet. Jupiter is bigger. It's simply in this case, because it's angular, it's half square. It's on that hard aspect of, you divide something by two and you get an opposition, and two again you get a square, and two again you get a half square or a square and a half. And in fact, you can keep going down that chain. But because Jupiter is stressing this energy, it's actually making it more palatable. We see the authoritative Jupiter being more authoritative without respect to reality. We see the progressive Uranian being more progressive without respect to reality. You know, because the Saturn and Uranus dynamic has been in play for so long now, on some levels we're used to it. We think, well, this is the way it's always going to be. But with Jupiter there now, it's turning the volume up on both sides of that. And then you add those planets coming in from the other side, the Sun, Mercury, and Venus, and this whole thing is really kind of whacked out of shape.
Okay. So that's the Jupiter story. Mercury, Sun, Venus, all are going to be opposite Jupiter.
Or have been in the last week.
Or have been. Okay. Then we have all these planets moving direct. So we have Pluto going direct.
First
we have Mercury.
Mercury on October 2nd.
Then Pluto, then Saturn, and then Mars going retrograde. So how's that all going to be experienced?
It's like a big pot of cosmic stew. and you've been stirring it one way and stirring it the stirring it, and the heat gets turned up and things begin sticking, and you take some places and you stir it backwards just to kind of get that stuff scraped off the edge. It's a change. I mean, it's a very powerful movement, especially since we've been in such a retrograde phase now for a few months, as these outer planets, I mean, Mercury is turning direct. We'll, you know, early in the month, we'll notice that. But as Pluto first, then Saturn, in fact, then Uranus, and then Chiron over the next months, all those planets are going to begin poking into new ground again. And so we're kind of getting a taste of that this month. But with Mars turning retrograde, there's something that's still anchoring us in the past that doesn't let us move forward until next January. And I would suggest that, at least in the United States, that's largely the fact that whatever happens in November on that first eclipse, on the second eclipse, that those people don't actually take office until January. And so we may not see the impact of that Mars. It'll remain retrograde or holding on until things begin moving, and until it begins moving forward in January. But let's just take a look at that Mars for a moment, because Mars historically was not only a fighter, Mars was a lover. Mars is passion. Mars is our feelings that would make us feel strongly enough that we would, in fact, fight for something. We fight for those things that we love, for those people that we love. We will go to war. For the country that we love, we will go to war. But the problem is that when Pluto was discovered back in the 1930s, and Pluto was given to Scorpio, remember, prior to that, Mars ruled or was associated with, if you don't like the hierarchical rulership concept, Mars ruled or was associated with Aries in the daytime and Scorpio in the nighttime. And when Pluto was discovered, Mars kind of lost some of its sexiness. It became more of a tough guy because it was kind of, you take care of Aries, Mars, get out of Scorpio. I'm Pluto, I got Scorpio covered. And so our perception of the planets changed, but the fact of the matter is that Mars is related to passion. It's related to how we act on our feelings. Not Venus is what we want. Mars is how we go for what we want, how we create boundaries to hold off that which we don't want. And as Mars is really interesting, because Mars moves very quickly. And then when it turns retrograde, it takes forever. And what the best way to understand the motion of Mars is by a bow and an arrow, because you take an arrow and you put it into its sling, into the bow, and you pull back and you pull back and you pull back and you pull back and you pull back. And when you finally get enough tension on it, then you start aiming, and you're still pulling back and you're holding and you're holding and you're holding, and then you let it go. And at the moment you let it go, it doesn't move very fast, but it increases in speed, and it increases in speed very, very quickly. And here's the thing. Mars takes just under 2 years to go through all the signs, and it typically will go through a sign in less than 2 months, in about 50 days. So Mars will go through 11 signs in about a year and a quarter. And then when it turns direct, it'll hang out in one sign for up to 7 months. It's the bizarre, it was the puzzle that when Johannes Kepler was working on the laws of planetary motion, it was like, if you could figure out Mars, you could figure out anything, because its orbit was so bizarre. So here's what the current history is on our Mars right now. Mars is in Gemini, and in Gemini, it's not that Mars is uncomfortable. It's just that Mars gets distracted. Mars is our doing things. Mars is running errands. It's talking on the phone. It's going to work. It's doing some home remodeling project. And when Mars is in Gemini, it'll start working on this project, and it'll go, oh, look at that one. And it'll go over here. Then it'll say, remember that other project I was working on? I think I'm going to spend some time on that. And Mars is like open to potential and possibilities, but it's easy for it to get overwhelmed because it can get distracted. Mars actually moved into Gemini back on August 20th. And it doesn't move out of Gemini until March 25th. That's 210 days in the sign of Gemini, which is over half a year. It's 7 months. And then in the next year and a half or less than that, it'll go through all other 11 signs. So we have Mars moved into Gemini back in late August. And Mars moves all the way up to 25 degrees of Gemini by the end of October. And that's when it turns retrograde. It turns retrograde at 25 degrees of Gemini. And what that means is that from October 1st, when Mars hit 20 Gemini, until the end of October, when Mars is at 25 Gemini, Mars only moves 5 degrees for the entire month of October. It's not stationary. It's not retrograde. But when a planet moves slower, it's more intense. It holds its position longer. So even though Mars isn't retrograde through October, and we felt some of this even back in September, Mars barely is moving all month. In fact, the month prior, or in a typical month, Mars will move about 22, 23 degrees in a month. And now Mars is moving at 1/4 of its regular speed. So Mars turns retrograde on October 30th, but all through the month, Mars is slowing down. It's inching slower and slower. It never moves fast all month. And then when it finally turns direct on January 12th at 8 degrees of Aquarius, that point of 8 degrees, when Mars first reached that point, was back on September 4th. And the reason why that's important is that on September 4th, Mars reached 8 degrees. It goes forward, it goes back to 8 degrees, and then it moves forward. That area of sky where a planet covers once, twice, three times, that's called the shadow. That's the area of, if you have planets in your natal chart, let's say between 8 degrees of Gemini and 25 degrees of Gemini, that's the shadow area, then Mars is going to contact those planets one time going direct, one time going retrograde, and then the third and final time going direct. And in fact, if you have planets between 8 and 25 degrees, not only of Gemini, but of the opposite sign Sagittarius, or the square signs Pisces and Virgo, that Mars will oppose or square those planets three times. Now, if you have planets in the other air signs of Libra or Aquarius, then Mars between 8 degrees and 20 degrees is going to trine those points three times, which is a very different energy. At any rate, this Mars slowing down is significant because we'll watch the anger, the expressed anger, get hotter and hotter and hotter. And again, some things you don't need to be an astrologer to kind of assume this is what's going to happen, because it's already out there. It's already set up.
Mm. That's quite a Mars story. I mean, really, like the whole thing, even the context of the fact that we're going to be in this Mars Gemini for 210 days, this month is only moving 5 degrees. So Mars is Jupiter's pronounced, Mars is pronounced. You also mentioned that there's a full moon you want to touch on, and then we also have these eclipses.
Right, but let's not forget that even though these planets are so pronounced, the Saturn square Uranus is also pronounced, and even by the end of October, it's still only 1 degree from being exact, even though it's not exact, and it doesn't get exact this time around. The fact is that that's still the anchor behind all of this. There have been people who have been talking about, you know, the Mars-Uranus square being tied to economic downturns, the real estate crisis back in 2008, and many others. And economics is not necessarily my primary interest, but we certainly are at a delicate point with that, with the stock market having tumbled a couple of times and inflation being out of control and the whole supply chain thing being so screwed up for a combination of reasons, whether it be the Ukrainian-Russian war and or COVID or whatever. I mean, we're not out of the woods here at all. And yet there's that Jupiter station, people have a lot of hope that they haven't had. And yet at the same time, you know, Saturn Uranus is not giving up.
Rick, Sandy asked this question. Yeah. Didn't this happen with Mars in 2020?
Yeah, it happens with Mars every other year. And in fact, in 2020, it was in Aries, I believe. Mm,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. This thing with Mars is not, if the end of the world is an unusual event, this thing with Mars is not, because it goes retrograde every other year like clockwork.
Mm, okay. Would you like to address the full moon next, or would you like to go to the eclipses?
No, well, let's talk about the full moon because it's on the way to the eclipse.
Okay.
The next lunation that we have is on October 9th. The full moon on October 9th occurs at 1:54 p.m. Pacific time. And the sun is at 16 degrees of Libra, which means the moon will be at 16 degrees of Aries. This is an Aries full moon. Incidentally, this full moon falls right in the middle of my own personal Aries cluster. It's lined up with my sun in Aries exactly. So we'll see how I fare. On the other hand, we have, and this is what makes this full moon very, very powerful, we have the full moon is conjoined to Chiron in Aries, Chiron retrograde in Aries, while Venus is conjoining the sun in Libra. And so we have this Venus-Sun-Chiron-Moon tug of war going on. That's definitely, this is a relationship. This is a relationship issue chart. I mean, the relationship issue here is about how do our feelings that are not being fulfilled, Chiron, the wound, conjunct in Aries, how can we speak about that in some way to make a relationship perhaps healthier or better with the Venus so sweetly conjoined to the sun in Venus's home sign of Libra? This is like a yummy kind of a thing. However, there's another layer of yumminess on this particular full moon, and that is that Venus and the Sun in Libra are coming into a trine with Saturn in Aquarius and Mars in Gemini. We just recently had, September 27th, we had Mars making a trine with Saturn. Remember, Uranus is squaring Saturn, but Mars from Gemini made a trine with Saturn. And so at this full moon, we will have the Sun and Venus making an air grand trine, or a grand air trine, as we probably should say. And that grand air trine involving the Sun and Venus, Saturn and Mars really is quite sweet in the midst of all of this other crazy stuff. We also have, at the time of that full moon and in the days after it, we also have Mars forming a square with Neptune. This Mars-Neptune thing is an interesting piece because remember I said earlier that when we have planets that are between 8 and 25 degrees of mutables, that would be Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces, that Mars, because it's going to go direct, retrograde, direct, will hit it three times. Well, Mars is coming into squaring Neptune, and Mars will square Neptune on October 12th. Once Mars turns retrograde, it will square Neptune again on the retrograde, and then again next year, sometime in February, it'll square it the third and final time. And this Mars square Neptune is a tough piece because it's confusing. Remember, you know, Mars is that get up and go, and Neptune goes, huh? Where are we going? It's a bit of a damper on this energy of wanting to accomplish things. And so in this full moon, we have all this positive stuff, but we also have that Mars squaring Neptune and, of course, the Saturn squaring Uranus. Interesting full moon. I love the fact that there's the Air Grand Trine. And in fact, we also have Mercury now moving direct. Remember, Mercury turns direct on October 2nd. And Mercury, once it turns direct, it will make its third and final trine to Pluto on October 6th, just a few days before this full moon. So I think we're getting some really solid information that would be Mercury that's useful, that would be Virgo, about the structures that would be Capricorn coming from places that were hidden. This has been an issue over the last couple of months as Mars first went direct, then retrograde, and now direct for the third and final time in that trine to Pluto. And Pluto has also been playing an important role as we move through October. We're going to get the Sun, Venus, and Mercury as they're moving through latter degrees of Libra. They're going to each make a square to Pluto. And here the secrets that come out are going to be a little bit more complicated, a little bit more intense. We have the Sun squaring Pluto on October 19th, Venus squaring Pluto on October 20th. That's going to be a really interesting couple of days. And then Mercury squaring Pluto on the 27th. So this full moon is in some ways feeding into what will be the first of the two eclipses, and that will be on October 25th. And the eclipse on October 25th, I don't think is nearly as nice. And in fact, the second eclipse on November 8th that we'll just mention in passing, we'll dig into on the November forecast, is rather nasty. And because I'm just going to only spend a moment on it, the lunar eclipse on November 8th, that eclipse, which has the moon in Taurus and the sun in Scorpio, the moon in Taurus is conjoining both the North Node and Uranus. So it's a full moon eclipse conjunct Uranus, while the sun is conjunct Mercury. And so Uranus, Mercury, electric, unexpected. Uranus opposed Mercury, not conjunct. Uranus opposed Mercury while they're both conjoining the sun and moon during the eclipse on election day while Mars is retrograde. Election day is going to be a mess. And it's going to be a surprise. It doesn't matter what we expect. It's going to be a surprise because Uranus is involved. Okay, so this solar eclipse on October 25th occurs at 3:48 a.m. And this eclipse is a solar eclipse in Scorpio, and it's conjoined to Venus. Venus certainly sweetens the energy, but it's in Scorpio. And this has a lot of intensity to it. And there aren't, aside from the eclipse's conjunction to Venus, and that's very close. Aside from that, there aren't a lot of other connections from this eclipse. In fact, the two closest aspects, it's Mercury, which is moving direct, you know, of course, by then, at 22 degrees of Libra. Mercury is kind of connected all over. It's connected by a quincunx to Neptune. That's going to be the G. I'm not sure who to believe. You know, that's the confusion aspect. It's connected by an applying trine to Mars, which basically says communication is strengthening. In fact, that Mercury is actually in the process of forming a leftover grand trine from the eclipse 2 weeks ago. It's like Mercury is sweeping through that area of sky where the eclipse was. And so Mercury is creating a grand trine in air as it trines Mars and Saturn. I don't think this is a terrible eclipse. I just think it's not nearly as sweet as the, even though Venus is involved, I don't think it's quite as sweet as the full moon 2 weeks prior, but it's also an eclipse. And remember, solar eclipses in particular, the old traditional history, you know, is long live the king must die, long live the king. It's change of power. And obviously we've seen that already in England. And what that means here, it's hard to tell at this point in time. But that is certainly a piece of it. There's actually two quincunxes right around that eclipse. One is the Mercury to Neptune, which is confusion in what is true. And then the other is Mars coming into a quincunx with Pluto. And that Mars quincunx Pluto is not exact until, well, oh, it's, it comes so close, but then Mars turns retrograde and it never, ever, ever quite fulfills it. And that's really a frustration at the end of the month. It's like we're going somewhere, we're going there for sure, and whoops, are we going anywhere at all? Yeah, it's an interesting eclipse because it's unclear, and yet there's some real odd kind of like inconclusive energy tied up in the eclipse itself. And remember, this is going to lead up to the following eclipse on election day.
So Rick, I think it was Stephen the Jupiterian suggested that maybe a better theme for the month is point of no return. Would you agree with that? Or do you still think it's just turning points in general?
It's words. I think either works. I think we've been at a point of no return for maybe about 15 years now, maybe even longer. A turning point is a point of no return. And yet a turning point really, if it's turning, there is a return. What are we returning to? You know, are we returning to some past that wasn't like we think it was? Or are we returning to some excitement about being able to make the future what we hope it to be, or is it something in between? I don't have an answer.
Okay. And what would you say with all of this, lots of different types of energy, lots of different movement types, lots of different aspects, a lot of stressed aspects with a kind of a sweet full moon in the mix. What would you say is the best strategy or mindset or approach that we can use as we look ahead towards October?
Well, in some ways, I would say this is just another month. The same strategy is always the right strategy, you know, and that is, you know, be compassionate, act kindly, try to find the truth, know what your values are and live them the best you can. But I think that the other piece that I do think is important, and I think it's something that's been important for, almost a couple of years now, since the never-ending March of 2020. And that is that when it feels like the end of the world, it's not. Life goes on. History goes on. Regardless of how urgent the immediacy or urgency of a present moment might be, the present moment always fades and it becomes something else. Now, I'm not saying that to make anyone lazy and not do what needs to be done today or yesterday or tomorrow. That's not my point. My point is that perspective is a very healthy thing. And sometimes I want to say we astrologers, but it's not something that I find myself getting caught up in as much as other astrologers. And that is that everything that happens is the only time this has ever happened. This hasn't happened for 14 million years. This hasn't happened since whatever. Oh my God, this is the most, life goes on. In fact, if there's a lesson that we've learned in the 20th century, it's that the mystics have known this all along, but now, any intelligent person, could be aware of the fact that, life goes on, even when you die. It's, mm-hmm. It's not that it ain't over till it's over. It ain't over ever.
I love that perspective so much and that reminder. My love, Gary, doesn't call it death. He calls it graduation. And that just helps to change the languaging around like this ending. It's like, actually, we're just moving to another dimension or another realm. But Rick, I have a question for you.
Language-wise, I've now been training myself to not use the word birth or death. Mm. Because the two words technically are incarnation and disincarnation.
Yeah. I love
incarnation
that.
And disincarnation. Helen Keller said that dying is just like walking into another room.
Wow. It's so awesome. Okay. Because of you, I've been listening to Carolyn Casey's books, several. One, Making the Gods Work for You, and mm-hmm. the other, Visionary Activist Astrology. I highly recommend both to any of you that are interested in a very experiential approach to astrology, kind of what we talked about last time, Rick, with the planets in your pocket kind of idea. But what's really great about it, to speak to what you were just talking about, is that I think it was written in 1998. And so it's like right at the turn of the century. And there was a lot of feeling, I can tell by the way she's speaking, that there were a lot of sort of, and I do remember this as well, kind of end of the world sort of prophecy sort of ideas. And like you just said, the world didn't end. The world has continued. Transits are happening all the time. That's one thing astrology can help us really just rest into, is that these transits, the intense ones, the hard ones, all of them, they come and they go.
My now disincarnated old astrology partner, buddy Jeff Jauer, used to say that this was the Astrologer's Full Employment Act. The planets keep going around.
Exactly. There's always some sort of drama in the sky, right? Oh, I love that. Okay. So in summary, unless there's anything else you want to add about October, I mean,
there are, I guess sometimes we gloss over the days when there are some smooth energies. And I did mention a couple of these, but I'm going to just give a string of days when there are powerful trines to outer planets. October 6th, I mentioned that one, that's Mercury trine Pluto. The Sun trine Saturn, this is stabilizing organizational hard work through from October 11th, the Sun trines Saturn. And on October 14th, Venus trine Saturn, those few days in there, get stuff done. October 17th, then, the Sun and Venus trine Mars. Now, remember, this is that background of that grand air trine that I was talking about that incorporates the Sun and Venus. The Sun trines Mars on the 17th and Venus trines Mars on the 18th. Again, these are like feel better days. And then Mercury moves through those same points, trining Saturn on October 22nd, and Mercury trines Mars on October 26th. It's not like the month is all overwhelmingly difficult. These are all periods of time, the 6th through the 12th, the 14th through the 17th, 18th, 22nd, 26th, where we might have a bit of respite to actually accomplish things. Yeah.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for doing that, Rick. You're right. It is kind of like the, you know, focusing on the drama points.
We all do that. Think back in your life. What do you remember? You know, do you remember the birthday when everyone gave you wonderful presents? No, you remember the day so-and-so left you or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So in summary, we have this Jupiter action, which is essentially holding a position of a half square to Saturn and Uranus, also Mercury, Sun, Venus, all opposite Jupiter. And so all opposite Jupiter's square and a half to Saturn and Uranus as well. So yeah. Lots of Jupiter emphasis, which is just making everything bigger.
By the way, we didn't mention, and we should, or I mentioned it, but I never came back to it, that Jupiter retrograding in early Aries actually slips back into Pisces on October 28th for like a remedial remembrance of feelings and emotions before it goes back into Aries in December, just before the end of the year. And then it whizzes through Aries, and before we know it, by May, I think it's in Taurus. But Jupiter is also part of the big shift going on toward the end of the month.
And I think for some people that feels like good news in a way, just because that Jupiter in Pisces back in the spring was so lovely on so many levels. I think,
it's Jupiter in its original home sign or domicile.
Right. Okay. So Jupiter's making everything bigger. Then we have a bunch of planets going direct. So we have Mercury, Pluto, Saturn, all going direct. So this is a big turning point. But what you said is it's not a turn on a dime. It's a turn on a half dollar. Is that what you said? Yeah. Something
maybe,
else.
Maybe it's a roundabout in the Australian outback. You know,
like there we go.
We are turning, but it's not like a...
It's right. Okay. I like that visual. Very nice. Okay. So we're on a roundabout, we're turning, but the ripple effects of these the turning point is going to play out for the next few months at least.
Right.
Yes. Sure. Okay. And that amidst these planets going direct, we have Mercury going retrograde and, until
Mars.
I'm sorry. Mars is going to stay in Gemini until late March. But we have Mars retrograde until January, mid-January.
Yes. Yeah, January 12th, actually.
Right. Okay. And so this Mars, the Mars flavor, essentially, is that anger might get hotter. We have more intensity. We have Mars not moving very much. So whenever planets are kind of station or just moving really slow, their influence is felt even more. But you did emphasize that Mars isn't always the fighter. Mars also is the passion. Mars is the lover. So we're probably going to see a lot of both, essentially. We're going to see a lot, of the warrior Mars, but also the Mars that's inflamed enough to feel like it needs to fight because it feels passionate about protecting something.
Right, but it can be inflamed enough that it feels like it needs to love. And remember, the October 25th eclipse is in Scorpio. That's Mars's other home sign. It's its traditional home sign. So, we'll be getting both sides of that.
We also have these two eclipses, one happening this month in October, the other happening on November 8th. The eclipse theme that you brought out was, you said October 25th is a not very nice eclipse. But the November 8th eclipse is nasty. So we have kind of like a not very nice one followed by a nasty one. You said one of the most intense eclipse energies that you've ever seen, which I know we just talked about people doing that, but the thing is you barely ever do that. So when you do it, I pay attention. And I like to emphasize it because you don't do it very much. It's not like every month there's the most nasty eclipse ever.
Let's just remember, what's bad for one person is not bad for another person. Mm-hmm. I always use the image of, you know, of going to the beach with your suntan lotion and it's raining out. It's bad for you. But that's the favorite day for ducks because they get to have the beach without all those damn humans running around. So this good bad thing is interesting. It's intense is perhaps a better way to say it. It's the result of that second eclipse is going to be profound, whatever it is.
Mm. Okay. One thing I just wanted to go back real quick, something you said about Mars, is that anyone with planets between 8 and 25 degrees of Gemini and or Sagittarius, Pisces, Virgo, these are the signs that are going to feel it the most in terms of intensity. But then you mentioned a few that will feel the trine, which was Aquarius and what?
The air signs, Aquarius and Libra.
Oh,
great. Because Mars is moving through Gemini, is going to square the mutable signs, square or oppose the mutable signs, and it'll trine the ones of the same element, and that's in air.
Hmm. Okay. I don't have that all memorized yet. I love when you astrologers do that. You make it sound so easy. The full moon on October 9th is another thing that you pointed out. You said that this is a relationship issue chart, but it seems like an opportunity to actually sort of sweetly address core wounds. Instead of it being real aggravated, it's more like, oh, hey, like let's bring some compassion to these things. Let's bring them out into the open and see them. But it doesn't necessarily mean, it doesn't sound like it's going to be super aggressive around that energy, like conflict, more sweetness. You said you used the word yummy several times.
Yeah. And someone asked if the sun in its fall affects that full moon or the Kazemi, with the Kazemi meaning Venus lining up with the sun in Scorpio. No, that's not in its... Oh, Venus is in its fall because Venus is opposite Taurus. I don't know. I don't put a huge amount of emphasis on that. So I pass on that.
Okay. Great. All right. So you said that this is sweetness in the midst of crazy. There could be some confusing energy around this full moon. Again, this is on the 9th. Useful information about structure coming from hidden places. You also said that Pluto, Sun, Venus, and Mercury are going to square Pluto. So this is secrets coming out that are complicated and intense. This is happening mid-October and then again, late October. Then you gave us a nice list of trines. So these are really... these are good days to note down. You said October 6th, October 11th and 14th, get stuff done. You said October 17th and 18th are going to feel better. And you said that on the 22nd, 26th and 27th, there's a respite from some of this intense energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we just briefly talked about Jupiter going into Pisces, kind of giving us a taste of that March, April, Jupiter and Pisces energy that we felt in the spring. The strategy for all this is compassion, know your values and your truth and kindness. You also said when it feels like the end of the world, it's not necessarily.
It's not necessarily. And I would also say, I would add my other, I say this often, and that is if you meet someone who knows what's going on, they don't, including me.
Fabulous. Thank you for that reminder as well. Hey, if you all love this show, and if you love the Cosmic Connection and the other things that we offer at Astrology Hub, make sure that you are signed up for the Insider. The Insider is our free weekly newsletter that essentially gives you a roundup of all the great content that happened in a week. It'll give you some summaries too, so you can actually see the play-by-play of the astrology by the week. And then you'll know when these episodes, the Cosmic Connection, and when other episodes on the channel are actually happening. You can also subscribe to this show, and then you'll be updated anytime that we go live. But again, the Insider is the way to make sure that you are going to consistently get updates from us, so you'll know what happened the week before. And Rick, thank you so much for your generous, wise perspective that you come and you share on this platform. It is such a gift to all of us. I think about the legacy that's being created through your transmission, you know, and just the way that you filter and receive and then reflect the astrological energies is just so precious. And we're so grateful. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. I mean, you just like donate your time. Like Rick shows up and he's here to share with our community. And it's such a gift. So thank you for that.
This is actually going on your karmic credit account.
Just mine or all of ours?
Everyone's.
Everybody's. Okay, great. Well, we're racking up some serious debt. All right. Well, thank you so much, Rick. I hope that you're enjoying your East Coast jaunt.
I'll have some photos on Instagram one of these days.
Oh, good. Awesome. And then we'll get to see you in a couple of weeks for our mid-month Cosmic Connection episode, which we'll be doing. We'll be covering some aspect of astrology. If there's anything that you all really want to learn about from Rick, if you want him to like do a deep dive on a specific topic, let us know in the chat so that we can actually cover those things and get your input. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. Thank you for being a part of our community. Thank you, as always, for making astrology a part of your life. Enjoy your October, and we'll look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. All right. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Rick.
This podcast is presented by Astrology Hub. You can learn more and find all of our shows at astrologyhub.com/podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes and help more people find the wisdom of astrology. Thank you for taking the time to do this now. Thank you for being a part of our community and for making astrology a part of your life.